Hello, everyone. This is Cassie Burns, co-founder of All Your Data. I'm an attorney who's been using AI and machine learning for 10 years. I love data and love talking to people about data, and that's what this podcast is about. Each episode of Cassie and will feature a new guest. Each guest comes from a different background with a different approach and attitude towards technology. We'll talk about their experiences and hopefully we'll learn a thing or two. Thanks for joining. Let's get started with Cassie and Brian.
Brian Hirsch.
Brian Hirsch. There we go. Brian in the house. Thank you. Well, I appreciate you for being here, Brian Hirsch, for this episode of Cassie and. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. It is gorgeous out today. I'm loving it.
Well, I have invited you to talk about a topic I love talking about, which is blockchain. But I met you through, do you mind me telling the audience about how we met?
Sure. Yeah.
So a previous guest of mine introduced me to you, Brian, and his name is Merrill Hirsch, who is your dad. I love the multi-generational guests here at this podcast. But yeah.
Is this the first time? Is it a new record?
I think it is. Yes. Yeah. So the Hirsch guys got it. But I know your dad, Merrill Hirsch, through the Academy of Quarter Pointed Neutrals, and he knew I was interested in technology, and he said, "Well, I have a son who's into this blockchain thing." And I was like, "Oh my God, I have to talk to him." So, and then we met at the annual meeting, the Academy of Quarter Pointed Neutral meeting, because mm-hmm. you talked about blockchain and all that stuff. But enough about me talking about you.
You had an amazing talk on AI.
Oh, you know me. I can't not talk about AI. But let's give an intro. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself? You aren't from the legal world. You're from the tech world. So tell us about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm an entrepreneur. I love building companies with new technology that's kind of about to hit the mainstream in some sense. Originally, I actually started in the smart home industry. But actually, before that, I bought my first Bitcoin. So, you know, if anyone's looked at the prices of Bitcoin lately, I can just say that I sold my Bitcoin originally at $500. So not the wisest investment, as it turns out, or not the wisest thing to sell, but completely ignored blockchain for a while. I work in the smart home space, which is really cool tech as well. And eventually, I wound up coming back. So I had finished up my first startup back in end of 21, early 22. And then I joined a friend's startup as interim CEO, where I took them from pre-seed to B round. So it was quite an exciting time. That got me back into blockchain. I was looking at it before because, and we'll dive into this, I just think that the technology is so fascinating. And at its core, it allows us to build these products and services that never existed before. So, you know, that excites me, being able to build new products and services and companies to deliver those, I find fascinating. So I jumped back in.
Well, we have something a little bit in common. A company I worked for a long time ago, back in 2008, it was an Internet of Things company before anyone knew what Internet of Things was. Ooh. And it was too early on the market and it didn't make it. And it was in 2008 when the market was so hard, and I was there a week and then they had layoffs because they didn't get the funding that they were expecting. So that was amazing for me. I loved it. But it was interesting because, you know, Internet of Things wasn't even talked about that much. And of course, that's what a smart home is all about, right? Using an element of a smart home, right? So
definitely.
But it was devices where you could connect with other homes and share information. Of course, like, we've evolved beyond that through our phones and other things. But yeah, it's, when you mentioned that, I was like, oh, that brings back a fond memory. But
a fond 1 week memory.
Yes. So I would love for you, at a very high level, to talk a little bit about what blockchain technology is, because I think a lot of people hear blockchain and they think like scammy, like pyramid scheme for bros or whatever. And there's more to it than that. That is an element of it, but that's not all of it. Can you walk anyone through what blockchain is who maybe isn't that familiar with it?
Yeah, definitely. I like first thinking about it from a completely non-technical standpoint. What does actually blockchain allow us to do? It allows us to communicate directly with each other and trust that what you've said you've done, I can verify that you've done. At its core, it kind of takes the place of an intermediary to provide that service to us. So in the same way, right now, if I want to send you money on PayPal, we're both trusting PayPal to facilitate that transaction. Blockchain is a way of computers networking together that allows us to take PayPal out of that equation. And of course, as we'll dive in more, this fundamental ability of blockchain has so many applications and allows us to work with each other more directly in so many different ways.
And can you talk about, like, how is that trust created? Or it's a trustless system, right? It's like saying, mm-hmm. I don't know if I trust you, and I don't know if you trust me, but this technology prevents the need for that trust. But there has to be some sort of authentication. Like, what's the mechanism for that, Brian?
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's go like one level deeper. Most blockchains are a distributed ledger. So we've got this ledger, we can all write transactions to it. We can all validate that the transaction you wrote is legitimate and is recognized by the system. And the other party can see that's been validated. Now, in terms of how does a network actually accomplish this, different blockchains vary in terms of how they actually accomplish that consensus. And it's called a consensus mechanism. The Bitcoin, which is the blockchain that most people have heard of, is the only blockchain that's using a proof of work as a consensus mechanism. And notably, the concerns that people have about energy and efficiency of blockchain, at this point in time, it's really only Bitcoin that is energy inefficient that way. The reason that it's energy inefficient is because the way that proof of work operates is essentially you have a track with a lot of racers lining up, and all of the racers go at the same time to try to get to the finish line. And whoever wins the race is the person who actually creates the next transaction on the chain that we can all see. But everyone else, unfortunately, still needed to run the race. And that's the energy efficiency loss right there. Other systems, other blockchains like Ethereum, which is the second most popular blockchain network, don't use that consensus mechanism anymore. They use proof of stake, which the simplest idea is that, you know, we're going to put up some collateral so that if the block is created incorrectly, I'll lose that collateral, and therefore I'm incentivized to keep operating, you know, following the rules of the blockchain. There are some other ways to accomplish this consensus mechanism, but those are the kind of core ones that are used. At this point in time, yeah, proof of stake is significantly more popular. Yeah.
And proof of work, correct me if I'm wrong, but the compute needed to run that race is similar to the compute needed to run AI systems that are so popular now, right? I mean, it's fairly significant, very expensive hardware out there in addition just to the energy costs. So, and I remember at one point, Ethereum was also proof of work.
Proof of work,
and
yeah.
then they had a merge and they went to proof of stake. And I remember being in an audio chat on what was in Twitter where people were, all these people, all these miners, the people racing, that's called in essence mining. They had all these GPUs that they had bought and they aren't going to be able to benefit from it. And it was, what can we use with this power we have now? They could use it for AI. Cool. So do you think that timing of maybe proof the merge happening and then not too long after that there's been huge growth in AI. Do you think that's connected in any way?
I'm sure some of the compute power went towards this, but I think that the actual processors that people are using for AI are more similar to graphic processors. I'm sure you could direct it, but I think probably they went towards other blockchains that are still using proof of work, that there's some small blockchains around that still use this.
And there are a lot of different blockchains, right? Oh, sorry, go ahead. You're going to say something, Brian?
Yeah. Actually, I was going to point out a difference in these blockchains. The biggest difference is between Bitcoin and Ethereum. I mean, these are the two big guys. There are a few other ones that are quite popular as well. But the biggest difference that Ethereum brought, it was the second blockchain that came around, is that Bitcoin is almost exclusively just transactions back and forth. It was originally conceived as a decentralized payment system, so you could buy coffee with it and stuff like that. Ethereum, on the other hand, is a much more broad blockchain. So it's actually able to run software programs on the chain. Now, these software programs need to be quite simple because the computational power is quite expensive in terms of actually needing to put it on the blockchain, but it allows us to create smart contracts and do really more interesting things with blockchain. So probably today we'll dive into some other use cases of blockchain. Those are all pretty much exclusively on Ethereum and other blockchains. Bitcoin has started venturing out a little bit, but for the most part, it's still just transactions back and forth.
And it's interesting. There are people that are firmly Bitcoin loyalists and firmly Ethereum. And as an outsider, I'm endlessly entertained by how passionate people feel like one versus the other. So, but I will say, if anyone's interested,
how do you know if there's a Bitcoin maxi in the room?
How?
Don't worry, they'll tell you.
That's pretty accurate. I don't know if that's a joke. That seems fairly accurate. But I, if anyone's interested in Ethereum, there's a book called Cryptopians. I don't know if you've read it, but it's about the creation of Ethereum. And I found like that to me was very informative of I hear people talking about blockchain, but I don't really understand the words because there's a lot of conceptualism behind it that people talk about it as if you should know what it is. And it's like, you're talking about mining, and I'm thinking Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. You know, it's there are some leaps that have to happen there. But anyway, so let's talk about Ethereum a little bit. That's the beauty of Ethereum, the creation of it, is it created a mechanism where you could build layers of additional tech on top of it to not just be a currency, but also have some utility to it. So what are some of the main utility use cases that people have been using that blockchain for?
Yeah, there are hundreds of different projects trying out different things to accomplish with blockchain. Of course, cryptocurrency was the kind of OG use case, right? Every new technology needs some use case that brings it to the forefront, gets people interested in the tech. So yes, of course, want to mention that it is a great way to send value back and forth across the internet. So in that sense, you know, it's kind of like a SWIFT or ACH in terms of enabling payments around the world to anywhere. Of course, there's many applications outside of that. If you look at the fundamental ability of blockchain to provide a source of validity and truth of what's happened, there's a lot of interest in terms of supply chain management, where we can say, maybe I'm Starbucks and I'm getting beans from all over the world, from thousands of different farmers, and I want to validate that these beans that I'm selling were the beans that were roasted or farmed ethically and met their standards of how they do their operations. You can make a record of this batch of beans, put it on chain, and every time the beans are moved throughout the supply chain, you can track it, and it makes it an uneditable source of truth in terms of where that's come from. There's also lots of applications in terms of identifying yourself. So, you know, right now when we're online, generally we trust these, again, intermediaries to tell other people that we are who we say we are. So I log on to LinkedIn and, you know, I see Cassie and I know that this is your profile because LinkedIn tells me. But the problem with that is that if I want to now move to a different network, maybe I want to go on Instagram or you unfortunately decided to move to Google Plus back in the day. If you leave that platform, then all of those social connections that you've built up are locked with that intermediary and they don't allow you to take them with you. If you have a decentralized solution to that, then you can take your social network with you anywhere you go across any platform. There's also new projects in what's called DPIN, so decentralized physical infrastructure. For example, there's a project, Helium, that is building a cellular network that is completely made from the ground up. So anybody, you and I, can buy a small miniature cell tower and put it up at our home. And anyone walking around the city will use the cell tower, and I'll actually be rewarded for them using my cell power with tokens, which I can sell for US dollars when I want. But you know, you can create this physical infrastructure layer that's, you know, backed up with blockchain and enabled through blockchain. That kind of also goes into another use case, which is more broadly setting up new incentive structures for projects to start. So for example, in video games, you might buy an item. And right now, if you'd like to resell that item, there really isn't a way for you to do that. If you have a NFT, for example, representing that in-game sword or special outfit that you bought, then you can trade it online on these decentralized exchanges and buy those items. So there are really a bunch of different applications for this stuff. And to be honest, this is only scratching the surface. People are thinking of new stuff all the time. But those are some of the ones that I find fascinating.
Yeah. And we've talked about this separately offline, but I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago. There's a startup that is an ebook publisher on the Cardano chain, and the books actually get published on chain. So it's an ebook that you actually do own. It's not a license, which is what we've experienced thus far with the traditional ebook structure. You don't really own that. You have a license to it. And because they create scarcity because they only publish a certain number of them, and they have different covers that are available, and some are more scarce than others. So it's it's creating a mechanism potentially to trade or buy more, because you don't know what cover you're going to get until you after you buy it, and then it gets revealed to you. But I think it's great because that asset is the book itself is on what they call on chain. That the book itself is on chain. And so later you could sell it, or you could trade it, or you could give it to someone, which I think the concept is great. And they're actually going to launch even a mint to print, where you can eventually print your actual product. And even my husband is an artist. So he painted that painting behind me. And I've talked to him about, we should track all of your artwork on chain. If you ever sell anything, transfer that as provenance. So you're not like a Van Gogh secretly, someone's saying, this Van Gogh has been in my garage for 50 years, and I guarantee it's a real deal. If you tracked all of your artwork on chain, you would have a point of truth to that.
That's also another fantastic application, is provenance, and then also enabling us to have interesting mechanisms for reselling things online. So for example, you can imagine, or more concretely, let's say like music, for example. Perhaps you want to enable your audience to purchase some special limited edition track that you made, and you're going to make a custom version that's, you're only going to release 1,000 of it. You can release those. And then also within the smart contract that's managing these items, you could choose different margins when you resell the item. For example, I could sell this to my audience member, and if they want to resell it, I can make it such that I get 5% of that sale when they resell it. Maybe an even better example that might resonate with a lot more people is that for scalpers buying tickets online, people have a popular Katy Perry's coming to town. Scalpers just buy up the tickets and resell them for 3 times the price. I can actually set it. This ticket is an NFT, and it can actually only be sold at a specific price. And if you don't sell it at that price, it's not going to transfer. So you could solve the scalper problem by doing this. So really interesting, add kind of intelligence to the ways that these digital assets are passed around and bought and sold and traded.
And I think it is important to say, this is the identity online. It is a publicly available ledger, the ones we're talking about. There are some, I think, hybrid or private. But so all of your transactions that you could go and look at my wallet and see everything that I bought or sold. Yeah. And so this is kind of like maybe a misunderstanding of blockchain. There is an element of a dark web of people being anonymous on there, but the wallet activity is not anonymous. Whether or not you associate yourself with a certain wallet or not is up to you, but anyone can see that transaction and all the transactions on chains.
That's a major misconception in the space right now. I think it gets wrapped up with concerns, especially around nation states circumventing tariffs and things like this, or terrorist organizations getting funds around and things like this. But actually, it's really a terrible solution for that sort of thing, because it is all on chain. You can track everything. Even attempts at trying to hide these transactions is not incredibly effective. If you spend enough time, you generally can figure it out. And if it's a large enough issue, people do spend the time and figure it out. There are some new blockchains that are known as ZK blockchains, so zero knowledge. And that uses an area of cryptography that allows us to make transactions anonymously, but that is not the norm and is really just still an area of research. Because I think there is some value in that as well. For me personally, if I get paid in some stable coin, then I find it quite odd that people can now look at all of my transactions and where all of this money is gone. A lot of the times there are ways to have that be less of an issue. For example, if you send money to someone on Coinbase, Coinbase actually has their own wallet and the end user doesn't have their own specific wallet. So that makes it difficult for people to start snooping around, seeing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's really not anonymous at all.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be found out. So now something else I want to talk about where we can find things out potentially with blockchain is going back to the topic of maybe authentication or provenance. I personally see blockchain as a really great tool to help us deal with the problems around identification, authentication, validation of generative AI content, or as NIST is now calling it, synthetic content. NIST recently dropped a publication on risks around it. The thought is there are groups out there like the Content Authenticity Initiative where they're talking about, in essence, metadata in some way, whether it's embedded metadata or watermark or something, to identify and track things that have been created with generative AI. That's going to be a challenge because the bad actors, the threat actors, they're not going to follow those rules. And a lot of these tools are available in open source or on the dark webs. The people that are doing right are going to do right. The people who are doing wrong aren't. I personally, this is me, Noah, not speaking for anyone else. I think over time, we're probably going to nearly have to move to authenticated content first. Like you have to proactively authenticate content as this is me. This is my badge of approval. It's like I am from the region of Champagne, so I am Champagne type of a thing, right? Because the scalability of generative AI to create content and publish it online is so vast that I just don't see any other way to get around it. But maybe you can talk a little bit about how blockchain can help. And if you have any personal thoughts about whether or not that's going to be a likely direction, I would love to hear it.
Yeah, I think 100%. People often talk about blockchain and AI going together. I think that, candidly, I think AI doesn't really have that much to offer blockchain, but I think blockchain has a whole lot to offer AI. And I think the biggest solution that I can provide is exactly what you're getting at. We're seeing already fake videos and audio being dispersed on the internet through phone calls. In fact, there's a story that came out about thousands of voters in the US who received calls from a voice that sounded just like Joe Biden, asking them to stay home and not vote because that would somehow be advantageous for the Biden cause, with the goal of trying to get voters to not partake in the election. Now, while I might not fall for this because I work in the tech space and I know about AI and this generative AI wave, and I know that already the voice simulators are really quite good at copying other voices, a lot of people don't know that. So what blockchain can do to solve this problem is exactly like you're saying, it can provide a validated form of authentication for the source of this data. Got a cat saying hello to me. So for example, in this case, the Biden campaign could have a blockchain-backed key that is signing these advertisements so that when you see an advertisement, you can validate, yes, this advertisement is actually coming from the Obama camp or from the Biden campaign, and that is the source. Now, of course, scams are not going to go away overnight. People are always going to be figuring out ways to use AI and Gen AI and blockchain as well for malicious intentions. But this is something that I see entirely necessary for at least avoiding the worst of this new wave of Gen AI. I really don't see any other technology on the horizon right now that can solve that problem. There's a consortium of photo editing software and photo storage services, you know, like Adobe Photoshop or Adobe, and I think Google's in it, Apple's in it, who are trying to create some sort of solution for this. So you can prove the authenticity of an image and also ensure that it wasn't edited or wasn't, you know, generated by AI. But I think that really like blockchain is the perfect technology for solving that problem.
And I think it also is short-sighted, right? Because we're thinking of generative AI content or human content in a binary way when we talk about this. And the reality is it's like, you know, look at all the filters that have made their way into apps and our phones, and it's becoming more intermingled with the tools we use. And so it nearly needs to be on, this is something that I validate as me. And then it really becomes an issue and me, and I stand by what's on here. I don't know. I love the idea of more metadata because I love metadata, but I also just think that you're never going to be able to catch up with the technology, or are you going to be able to catch up with the threat actors? So maybe I would rather go on a social media platform that it's all authenticated people. There's a level of control. Of course, that goes on the flip side of some people do want to be more anonymous online. So how do you deal with that? I don't know, but I
think it'll be a range of both. Yeah, I think that there are places there are communities online in which being your true self and doxing yourself so people know who you are and a little bit about yourself, that's going to be what you want. I think something like LinkedIn would be the social network where, yes, if I say I'm this person, I should really be that person. You know exactly who I am. But I think there's also a place for anonymous communities and then also places for pseudonymous communities. Like on Reddit, for example, you have a username. People can see that you have posted in these different areas and said this stuff. They can see your content. So you're not anonymous, but they still don't know who you are as a person. And especially when you, you know, think about the internet as such a wide place, certain people are in groups in which they get more negative attention online, whether it's harassing comments on Twitter or X or something else. So that I think there is a place for certainly pseudonymity and anonymity.
I know. It's so hot. I can't say them either. Like, ugh.
Oh, boy.
I need my Gen AI clone to say these words correctly for me. So.
Yeah.
Well, and I want to talk a little bit about, let's go back to your dad a little bit. He's in dispute resolution, and there is in some ways a way that blockchain can be used in ADR, alternative dispute resolution. Isn't that right?
Definitely. There have been people already working on this. I'm going to jump to the chase and say I think it's a little bit early, but I see this technology being very helpful for especially international dispute resolution. Some early companies working on this, there are sort of two different approaches that I saw. One kind of camp of approaches was around creating sort of game theory backed dispute resolution mechanisms. For example, if there's some dispute, then jurors are randomly selected and they hear the case. And by jurors, I mean this very lightly. These are random people chosen online. These systems mainly work by people staking some collateral. And if they decided in favor with a majority of other jurors, then they were given the collateral plus some bonus. And if they were in the minority, then they were given some, their stake was taken away. And this was aimed at creating shilling point, which would allow the correct decision to be chosen. This sort of mechanism is quite fascinating, I think, and might be useful in some, let's say, low value dispute resolutions. So for example, you can imagine if there are two people on eBay who have a dispute about some item, the seller thinks that the quality matches the description, the buyer says, no, you put it as like new, and this is quite dirty or old or whatever. I think something like that could be useful. But if you start thinking about larger disputes, you've got some, $50 billion dispute, I'm not gonna use that sort of like shilling point type of solution. That's where you saw a different track, which is people trying to connect international arbitration and mediation to smart contracts. It's actually an idea that I was looking at for a bit, and there's another company that was doing it before me as well. We both came to the same conclusion that it's a little bit early for this. I think that route has great potential. If blockchain continues to expand, I've no doubt someone's going to build that company. Anyone out there, I'd recommend you run with this idea in like 2 years.
Right. Don't be like that company that I worked for that did not get funded. We were too early. That's the key. Don't start too early. Right. So.
Yep. But yeah, you can imagine people using blockchain for large international payments between companies, them having some smart contracts in which they've, agreed to operate on some project together. And like any contract, at some point, there's some disputes. We want to move this around or whatnot. We already have international arbitration mediation. It's been working pretty well for international dispute resolution. Tying that to blockchain for these smart contracts seems like a no-brainer eventually if blockchain continues to expand.
Now, we have talked a lot about a lot of the great things that come with blockchain technology, but I don't want to be a downer, but let's also talk about some of the challenges around it. I personally think there's a level of, this is a utopian technology that's going to solve all of these problems, but something, I'm not a developer, but I would consider myself a power end user of many technologies. And something I have learned over the years is there's always going to be points of failure. And what are they potentially and how do we minimize them? And usually it's where people are involved. Blockchain is not a people-less technology. So what are some of those potential points of failure with blockchain? Putting aside like the crypto scams, we know that's a point of failure of people using the technology, but just more generally using the technology.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem right now with blockchain is it's so difficult to use.
Oh, man.
The user experience in blockchain right now is quite awful. There's some really low-hanging fruit in terms of things that could be solved. Even the nomenclature around how you use things in the system. For example, you have a private key and a public key. One of these I'm supposed to give you, and you can send me money. The other one allows you to take all of my money.
Yeah.
Now, why are we using private key and public key in the rest of the world or the rest of the tech ecosystem? This is called an account and your password. So, some really basic stuff like that. In general, right now, it's too difficult to get started. You have to figure out how do I get a crypto wallet? How do I start to sign smart contracts?
Listen.
All of that.
You are preaching to the choir. I remember whenever I finally got my wallet, I was like, I want to get some crypto. I want to get some Ethereum. I want to buy some NFTs, like community-based NFTs, mm-hmm. projects. And the amount of time it took, I felt like I was Frodo and I was on my way to Mordor. Like, it took forever. And Bombadil, we went by and saw it took forever. And I feel like a fairly tech, I can figure things out, and you have to do this and then you have to do this and you have to do it in the right order. And yeah, you can exchange money right away, but whenever you buy it and you want to move it to your wallet, you have to wait X number of days. And then there's such a FOMO. Mm-hmm. There's so much FOMO around so many blockchain-based projects, like, it's going to drop now and you have to be ready. And that, like for anyone who's busy, it's really hard to get into it because of the setup time. And so many things are very like event timing availability based. And it's just, mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of free time. So like chasing this down, there nearly needs to be like concierge service, like an onboarding concierge service, get you set up. And yep. I'll be your little person to let you know when you want to get this, if you want to get this token. Otherwise, we're not going to get it because there's scarcity. So yeah, mm-hmm. I feel like I just had a therapy session. Sorry about that, Brian.
No, you're completely right. There's also issues around, sometimes having an intermediary actually does provide some value. As much as I was pointing out how we could get away with not using PayPal is helpful. If I send money to the wrong person, I can contact PayPal support. And most likely the person hasn't seen the money yet or whatever, and PayPal can just reverse a transaction, no problem. With blockchain, if I send the transfer to the wrong address, it's gone.
It's gone.
There's literally no one can stop it. It's a strength of Bitcoin, but it's also a problem.
It's so easy to get a wallet drained, right? If you click on a wrong link, that mm-hmm. has code embedded to drain a wallet that's connected. If you're on a device that has a connected wallet and you click on a link, you could potentially lose all the assets on that wallet. So I think that there has to be not only onboarding, there has to be a lot of education around proper use of these tools, or they maybe need to get more fail. Sometimes you do have to build a tool towards a wider audience that is maybe not as tech savvy.
I think what ends up happening in that direction is that the blockchain ends up getting abstracted away a little bit. Mm-hmm. There'll be other layers of technology in between the blockchain and the end users. So that in the same way that I don't think about using the internet when I'm using my phone, yet it's completely reliant on that. People are not going to think about using blockchain when they're interacting with some service online. And there'll be companies that have built solutions that allow this technology to maintain its advantages while creating a user experience that's approachable for the rest of the world. Right? Even you see constantly online on Twitter, people tweet that, hey, like, I am an engineer who's been working in blockchain for the last 15 years. And I clicked the wrong thing and got my wallet drained.
Right.
And this is the people with the most experience that are still having these issues. And clearly it's not ready for the limelight just yet.
Yeah. And if you ever, I remember I'm not on Twitter or X that much anymore, but I know the first mm-hmm. time I ever engaged in any way in any content that was NFT related, oh man, I was getting spammed like crazy. Click on this link. Oh, Cassie, click on this. You got selected for this, blah, blah, blah. And the vultures are out there. You have to be careful. So, mm-hmm. and just the way, those activities, those fraudulent activities may manifest are a little bit different. They engage with people a little bit differently. So,
yep.
Well, we're here at the end. I would love to hear just like any closing thoughts that you might have before we wind down this episode, Brian.
I would recommend if anyone's interested in learning more about blockchain and thinking about how this technology can be very useful. My favorite book recommendation right now is Read, Write, Own by Chris Dixon. He's a prolific investor in the space, works for A16Z, which is probably the best VC in the blockchain space. But that book does a really great job at laying out how blockchain can help the internet and why it matters. And yeah, I recommend it. All my friends that want more information about blockchain and want to think about this technology a little bit more.
And that's Read, Write, Own, correct?
Correct.
Yep. Gonna go get that. Thank you very much. I'll probably include a link in the podcast notes for anyone who wants quick access to it. Thank you so much, Brian. I'm so glad you joined.
Yeah, Cassie.
We'll have to have a revisit. Maybe we'll have a version 2 next year and see where we've evolved since then. Because I feel like
I look forward to it.
There's a lot of change that's going to happen, and hopefully all in the right direction. And for the audience, thank you so much for joining today. We appreciate you listening in. I know I've learned a thing or two, and I hope you have as well. And hopefully you'll join us for the next episode of Cassie and... you